So welcome to a podcast from the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose, and today we're having a chat with a doctor who, it was my first day in the role of DPD. There was an email in my inbox, and one of my first jobs to do was to look at an audit proposal from one of our members. And each year, as part of our recertification, we have to do some form of clinical audit. And while some of them are pre-arranged by the college, there are the options for people to perform their own audits. And this audit proposal had come in, and I went through it, and it was very good. And the author of that audit proposal was Dr. Dinesh Dionarain, who's a friend of the podcast. Welcome back, Dinesh.
Thank you, Guy. Always a pleasure. And I think probably the best place for me to start is an apology, because you took on your role, and I had actually gone ahead and actually done the audit without even getting permission for it first. So I've always kind of long held the belief that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. So apologies that I created some additional administrative work and kind of went ahead and did it anyways.
That's not a problem. And I agree with you that it's often better to ask forgiveness than wait for permission in some instances. And to be honest, what we're going to talk about today is how people can devise their own personal audits, because it's a big thing for us moving forwards into the revision of our recertification program, is that audit is a great way to analyze and see what you're doing. And by reflecting on that and addressing learning needs and then re-auditing, you create a cycle that creates very strong continuing professional development. So certainly what you put forward was a very compelling and very thorough proposal. So even though you were already getting on with doing it, the process remains the same, and it's something that I think people will benefit from hearing, so that they can do this themselves in the coming years. So what actually prompted you to think of doing an audit of your own choosing, and this particular one, what was it and why?
Yeah, that's a good starting point. You know, obviously, we've talked on a number of occasions, and often the topics we talk about is of course wilderness medicine topic, which is an area of interest of mine that I have, and doing something like an audit must seem very much like a far cry from that, and I did warn you that I have very much the geeky kind of Clark Kent side of and I've long been interested in both the process of research and audit and how they work together, and maybe that's probably a good point just to touch on, and it's just the difference between the two. You know, audit being more so looking at established practices and knowledge and seeing if they're fit for purpose and appropriate, whereas research is moving in the direction of trying to extend and create new knowledge or compare alternative methods of doing things. So if we look at the audit side of things, I got interested in it in particular because it was at the outbreak of the COVID epidemic. And there was a reams of information that was actually being spewed out and then carried forth by the media and kind of presented in different ways. And there was a lot of emotionality, you know, associated with the pandemic as well. And when you started to look at the primary research, which is something I tried to focus on, you start to realize that there was very little of quality there. And it would pay not to read the headlines, but to actually look at the primary research papers. So I started to think, are there other clinicians out there, in particular in urgent care, who are really trying to maybe not entirely bypass the media, but at least try and dig deeper into the primary research and understand the science behind what is going on? And that's really what took root in terms of an idea, and to create an audit to see what the standard that existed was in kind of background knowledge for the COVID epidemic. And really that was the root. So it was a survey-based exploration audit of what people's existing knowledge was.
So a lot of things definitely came to the fore when COVID kind of arrived relatively unannounced. It had a fairly short lead-in. So this is certainly a very topical thing. So it shows that you can choose something that is relatively new, like this pandemic that we're currently living through. Could you maybe just describe a little bit more detail of how you then, having had the idea, put the audit together?
Yeah. And so if we look at basically the audit cycle briefly, you start with a problem or an issue. And I got the feeling that the problem or issue at hand was that many clinicians didn't have the information at hand and were perhaps not looking in the right places for it. So that was the position. Since there was no established set criteria of what that knowledge should be for an urgent care practitioner, I basically had to create a standard for it, which I'll discuss in a little bit more detail. The next step is obviously your data collection and how you're going to go about doing it. As I mentioned before, I thought the easiest way to obtain this information was basically kind of a self-reported survey. And then I wanted to compare, obviously, the data, which is the next step, to the existing standard, which I'd created. And then the next phase is obviously to implement any changes, disseminate further information in this case. So that's kind of the cycle that you go through in any audit, and that's where those were the pieces in there. Really, to state it succinctly, the aim of the audit was really to assess the background level of knowledge of an urgent care clinician cohort in the early stages of the COVID-19 epidemic in New Zealand, and that was obviously kind of in mid-March for us. The standard, as I mentioned, there was no established standard. So what I set for the quiz was basically a 70% standard on a 10-question quiz, which I assessed to be a moderate difficulty. Now, how did I come up with this idea of moderate difficulty? Basically, I engaged the help of two external urgent care fellows to basically help review the questions once I'd written a pool of about 20 or 30 questions, and they provided their feedback and they said, well, you know, that's very difficult, that's unlikely to be. And then once we had consensus among the three of us, I would include that in a question in this quiz. And so from that 10-question quiz, I delivered it as a Google survey to basically my peer group. So basically the five other doctors I work with, all of whom are senior and experienced urgent care doctors. And basically the filled out the survey all probably within an hour. So the feedback was excellent. And I was able to collate the data from there.
And once you looked at all that data, what was your main finding?
It was quite surprising. I actually expected the doctors, because we had had a lot of kind of conversations, texting back and forth on WhatsApp about what was going on, I expected that their scientific knowledge and their interest in the papers would be very high. And I expected them all to actually exceed the standard. Now, interestingly enough, only one person exceeded the standard of 70% that I set for this quiz. The average was 5.8. And the range was between 3 and 8 out of this 10-question survey. So surprisingly, it showed a real strong deficiency in the actual scientific knowledge around COVID and their familiarity with the primary research. And I think this underscores something that I've long thought, is that in urgent care, we're faced with a huge volume of data to work with clinically, because literally anything can walk through the door of an urgent care clinic. And as a result, sometimes we don't have the time or the capacity to actually work on evidence-based medicine and the primary literature of certain findings. And it's probably a little bit of a call out to all us clinicians to maybe pay a little bit more heed to where the evidence comes from and what the quality of that evidence is, because that fundamentally is what will guide our clinical application and patient outcomes as well too. So it was an interesting and quite surprising result that I got from it, that 4 out of the 5 people surveyed actually performed lower than this kind of set point standard that I had made, and only one person performed slightly above that standard.
And where do you take it from there then, having got that? How did that then impact things going forwards?
Well, I think where I took it from there was to share the results, obviously, with the cohort and some discussion around that, and also just some encouragement about going to the primary papers and leading discussions on primary research that was coming out and what findings we should pay attention to. So that was just kind of the local impact of that. At a larger level, it may be something that I'll be able to kind of expand into a much larger survey, or and audit basically urgent care doctors, or maybe a selection of urgent care doctors in a much larger cohort.
So if we think about this as an audit cycle, you've done that that primary cycle, and is it something that you're how would you take it from here in terms of this one particular audit? What I'm getting at here is, I think there's a tendency for people from a recertification point of view to do something, park it and tick the box and move on. But do you see this rolling on into further audits down the line on the same topic, or expand it into other clinical questions outside of COVID, for example?
I think this is a very challenging one to repeat, because obviously if I send out the survey, the questions are already known. If I change the questions, the question begs, are you still, is there validity to the audit now that the questions are changed? Obviously in the backdrop, people have become much more knowledgeable, much more information is disseminated. So it's very difficult it's challenging to approach these things when the playing field is changing as well too. I'm happy to look at this particular audit maybe as a more of a pilot audit, maybe just to explore what is possible and how we might go about tackling these problems. I'm still obviously very much interested in the primary literature, but thankfully there's been a fantastic response in urgent care with the pandemic committee in providing a lot of those primary research papers. So I don't think there's an extremely strong need necessarily to audit or to re-audit beyond this. Because I think a lot of that work has been picked up by the pandemic committee. Nevertheless, I think it's an area of interest which I'll retain. And I think it'll also spark my interest in actually kind of looking at audits, self-created audits in different areas, which might test specific urgent care issues, rather than necessarily always go to the go-to audits that are provided by prescription by the College of Urgent Care.
Yeah, I think that's where I was heading with that one, was that there are these existing audits which look at outcomes of certain things such as X-ray interpretation and suture wound management outcomes. But this was a slightly different take on that people maybe hadn't thought of before, looking at things from this direction. So it was it could be perceived as a slightly out of the box way of looking at it. So do you have anything to say to people about that audit cycle and in particular maybe how it differs from what some people have perceived audit to be up to this point?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. I think people perceive audit to be a very dry, dusty, sort of painful thing. And I think if you enter it with that paradigm, you know, you'll always, you know, suffer a little bit. I think you really have to start expanding that and really bringing it back to what we're all in the game for, which is basically patient safety and the quality of what we do. So if we start to look at it from that point of view, I think it starts to shift your paradigm. Some of the advice I'd give people, you know, I think first and foremost, I mean, just be curious. Be curious about what's happening around you, and that might drive you in the direction, say, of primary research, but it can very easily drive you in the direction of audit as well, too. And the other thing is, look in your local environment. What is the need or the perceived need around you? And that can actually spark questions in your mind. I would engage people. Maybe don't follow my example in this part, and engage your director of professional development. Get in touch with Guy Melrose and provide him with an audit proposal before you start going wildly down your own path. but jokes aside, I think it's a very good idea to engage people. I know Sarah Hartnell is a person who is a guru in audit. There may be people that you both work with or know of that have a lot of experience in audit and a lot of interests and may be able to help and guide you. And I think the last thing, like anything, I mean, just go for it. You know, nothing really gets done unless you actually throw yourself into it and give it a go. And a lot of people, I think, thankfully, the idea of failure has become something that's seen as integral to progress and integral to success, rather than in the past where people, if something didn't work, they would feel mortally shamed by that fact. And I think, to have these projects or these endeavors that we do that do fail, to have a little bit of acceptance around the fact that that's part of a learning process as well too, and it will only make you better.
I'm very glad you mentioned that, because what you mentioned during your audit here on was your cohort of experienced clinicians underperformed from the standard that you set. And there is a feeling that that could be perceived as failing, and therefore that some people might react to that differently. The idea of doing an audit from the recertification point of view isn't to prove that you're perfect. It's to actually show a particular position and then take that information to inform your further learning and professional development going forwards. And then if you were to re-audit in that particular, you mentioned you couldn't really do it in this setting, but if you would, let's say you didn't interpret ECG, x-rays or ECGs or anything, completely perfectly, but then you went away and learned from that, and then you re-audited and you'd improved, then that's the real success, is that you didn't fail before, you just provided yourself the impetus to learn. So it is an important point that you meant, that failing is okay.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think it was very, very well received, the results, when I mentioned it to the group. And I think what it did is it actually sparked a real discussions around primary research, and we started to share a lot more as a result of that. So I think even without re-auditing at that point, we actually came up with a lot of more stimulated discussion around primary research and data out there.
Excellent. So thank you, Dinesh, for talking us through this. It is something that people can do. The information is on the website for producing your own audit. So if anyone looks at the ones that are available and goes, I don't like that, then there is, the possibilities are endless, essentially. You can choose your own and take inspiration from Dinesh finding something in the pandemic, a little bit of inspiration to push this forward. So thank you for talking us through this, and as always, it's great to catch up.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot, Guy.